Welcome to Real Talk with Chuck and Pam. Chuck and I are discussing the movies that are coming out this week, and I'm super excited about next week. But Chuck just like shocked me with something that he said, that he's so frustrated with something that he's not going to go see Godzilla. Do you say X Kong?
I don't know if it's Godzilla X Kong, Godzilla Times Kong.
Oh.
I don't know what it is. Yeah, because I look at it as a math equation. I don't know.
Right. Multiplied by Kong.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. But I think I'm just going to let that one go get by me.
Why? I'm shocked. You love those monsters.
But I don't like what the American company Legendary Films has been doing with them. The first Godzilla movie they made years ago with Aaron Taylor Johnson was really good. Kong, Skull Island, loved it. But then once they got to the second Godzilla, King of Monsters, and Godzilla vs. Kong, they've just become so incredibly silly. And they also suffer from bloat, like the superhero films just go on and on and on. And it's just, I don't find them fun. And then when I compare it to Godzilla Minus One from Japan, which came out last year, cracked the top 10 list, is like, wait a second. Okay, this is how it's supposed to be done, not this. So, and also the other factor is I'm old. I don't have a lot of time left, you know? The
clock I understand.
The clock is ticking. I mean, there's no time to watch bad movies. So, yeah.
I quite agree with you, especially as I look around the corner to Tuesday and I got a biggie coming up.
You know what? But you know what? You don't even look that. And I know you're going to say, no, that's not true, but it is true.
Wait, how do I sound?
No, that's not true. Yeah, when you talk, that's how you sound in my head.
All righty, good to know.
You want to hear how my wife sounds?
No, let's leave it at that.
All right. In my mind? Okay.
So what do you want to tell our listeners about? We've got a couple of movies that are opening this week, Asphalt City and In the Land of Saints and Sinners. I would really love to hear your take on Asphalt City because I had that one kind of haunted me a little bit.
I'm telling you, both of these films came out of nowhere.
Right?
Both of these films, I was like, I'm not expecting much. And this one especially blew me away from most of it. Sean Penn stars as this grizzled old paramedic in New York City. Ty Sheridan, a young actor, don't confuse him with Barry Keoghan from Banshees of Inisherin, although my wife did.
They look alike,
but not the same guy.
Okay.
He's the young EMT on the block who gets saddled with the old crusty guy played by Penn. And so he's got to learn the ropes real quick. This movie, I'm telling you, it really throws you out in the street with these guys as far as the job they have to do. And just the dangers that come with this job that you wouldn't expect. I mean, they're there to help people.
Right.
And, you know, they catch shit left and right from people trying to hurt them, won't let them do their job. The director is a guy named Jean-Stéphane Sauveur.
Oof.
Like my French there? Yeah.
Better you than me.
All right. French filmmaker, and he brings a gritty tone to this thing. I really loved it. And a lot of handheld shots. I mean, you're right there with these guys.
Absolutely.
I made a note. I always do top 10 scenes of the year. The opening sequence in this film is going to be there. He plunges us right into this. Looks like a gang shooting.
Yeah.
And all these gang members are around shouting. These guys are trying to go in to help these people who have been shot. They're dying. They can't do what they're supposed to do. We get from the park to the ambulance. We take the ride. It just was completely immersive. That moment, you talk about a hook. I couldn't wait then. What happens next? And we get moments like that throughout. Not as intense, but they really put you in there. And it ends up becoming really a tale about morality.
Oh, doesn't it?
Go on a call and they make a judgment call, or at least one of them does, and it calls into question everything that we've seen before. What I liked about the film, though, is even though these people make decisions that you might not agree with, I completely understand them from the point of view of where they are.
Okay.
You see how this job wears at them. You see how it breaks them down. You see how they start to question what they're doing and why they're doing it. Again, I don't condone what happened, but I understand how you could get to that place.
Sure. Absolutely. And we are, like you said, we are right with them every step of the way. It is a super stressful film to watch.
It is. I was exhausted at the end.
Oh, absolutely. I do feel like maybe a little editing would have like sharpened it up a little bit more. I felt like, okay, we're back here again. But Penn was wonderful. I mean, he's always good,
but here.
He was very subdued and very nuanced, which I don't typically think of when I think of Sean Penn. But yet then when he explodes, it's visceral, literally and figuratively.
The film kind of falters at the end, though, I think.
Okay. I wonder, you know, they bring into play the 9/11 bombings that the United States experienced. Right. And Rakowski, I think is what his name is, Sean Penn's character. And how that just has never left him, and he's never really dealt with the trauma as a first responder that he's had. And there were, I can't remember the exact line that he used, but as he's telling the story, it's a chilling story of his recollection.
Yeah.
And it's so matter of fact. I wonder if those words were maybe pulled from an actual interview from a first responder. That's how real and just guttural it is.
That's an interesting thought. That's really an interesting thought. Yeah. Yeah. I just thought at the end they played it a little safe.
Okay.
And wanted to tie it all up with a neat little bow.
Sure.
It seemed just a little bit too neat the last 15 minutes.
Okay.
That's where I would have edited. Not even any of that. But what a tragedy. A tragedy on so many fronts.
Oh, absolutely. And I wonder too, you know, how much is pulled from real life. I for those of you who don't know me, my husband is an oral surgeon, and he was at a level 3 trauma center at Michael Reese Hospital in Chicago, South Side. It's not there anymore. They tore it down. And many of our Saturday night dates, especially when there was a full moon, would end up in the emergency room because he would get called in for a gunshot wound to the face. And you know, you'd meet a lot of these EMTs, these paramedics that would bring them in, and they were tough as nails, man. And I can just imagine where they picked this person up, what now I can imagine what they had to go through. And now I understand why they were like, you know, kind of flipping about the whole situation.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, yeah, it's.
Talk about having your fingers in the dike while it crumbles around you. I mean, that's exactly what these guys are doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it made me think twice too about, you know, I live in a small community, and, you know, knock wood, we don't have a lot of those kinds of really dire situations happening, but we do have, you know, EMTs and paramedics that come and help people out who have had heart attacks and things. Gives me a new respect and understanding for what they do.
And one last thing about this one, when did Mike Tyson become a relatively decent actor?
Mike Tyson.
He was the police chief, or he was their captain.
Gosh.
He was their captain. Yeah, Mike Tyson shows up as their captain. He's got maybe 3 or 4 scenes. Every scene, though,
he's coming
out with Sean Penn, and he's great.
I didn't even realize it was Mike Tyson
with the gray little beard. Yeah, that was Mike Tyson.
He looks rather handsome, I have to say.
He's not a bad-looking man. Yeah, no, I think the facial hair really helps him.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, yeah, calms him down. But yeah, that was a highlight too. So, you know, but seek this one out. Asphalt City, it's rough, but man, it's worthwhile.
It really is. It's something that has stayed with me. I watched it a few days ago now, and it's definitely stayed with me, especially as I'm on the highway and an ambulance goes by. I think twice now, you know?
Absolutely. So what was the other one this week that surprised us?
In the Land of Saints and Sinners. This is a Liam Neeson movie. And when I think Liam Neeson, I think really bad action flick. I also think...
It's a shame, but that's what I think too. It's a shame.
Yeah. And so I don't look forward to them. I also have a bad story about him in Chicago.
And you got
to
get over that.
I know, but that's still in the back of my mind. But this one, it takes place in 1974. And he's kind of a sinner. He's not a good guy.
Oh.
And 1974 was the height of the Troubles, or the conflict in Ireland between the Catholics and the Protestants, and Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland, if you will. And he plays Finbar, and he is basically a hitman. And he's not on the right side of things, I'll just say that. And when he brings somebody to murder them, because he's been charged with that duty to do, this man actually has 1 minute, and a timer is set to say whatever the hell he wants to say. And Finbar could give a shit what he's saying, but then those words actually hit home to him. They strike a chord. And after he blows them away, he decides, you know, I think it's time to retire and maybe do some good in this world. What can I do? He goes back to his hometown in County Donegal. And wouldn't you know it, he's got some bad apples that enter the scene. And he's kind of got to take his job back. And he's hired himself to get rid of some of the bad apples. This is totally predictable. We know exactly what's going to happen. But the cool thing is, oh, absolutely. We know what's going to happen.
Okay.
I did. Okay. I felt like I did. I didn't think there were a lot of surprises. We had Kieran Hines, who I love, who was in Belfast, play the kind of dopey deputy. And he's trying to figure out, you know, what's actually happening. And he eventually does. Maybe it's a little too late. We've got Sarah Green, who plays Sinead, who's a single mom, who's got a little girl who has some issues with some of the bad guys that are in town. What I loved about it, though, is the fact that we, even though these bad guys, if you will, were kind of over the top, Carrie Condon, oh my God, she was incredible as the ringleader. Was she over the top? No, she wasn't. Although, man, if I met her, I think I'd be scared shitless because she is intimidating as anything. What a performance.
Sexy as hell too.
Okay. All right. If you say so.
That kind of strength. I mean, she's not taking any crap from anyone.
No. And she is the ringleader. She's got the smarts and she's got the chutzpah. And it comes down to a final battle scene between the two of them. The final scene is way ridiculous.
I didn't think so.
Oh, I did. When somebody gets like clobbered really badly and you know it's going to be a mortal wound and they come back to life and they can still fight. That kind of stuff bugs me.
I agree with that. But I'm thinking of the scene in the church.
Oh no, that was poetic. That was poetic. The final fight scene was
right. But unfortunately, that's necessary, and it does give us then the church scene, which I thought was very well done.
Yeah, I thought that was poetic, and I loved the characters. I loved the lady that played his next door neighbor.
Yeah.
I loved the young kid that looked up to him, wasn't the brightest bulb in the box. Yeah. And we get to know these characters. That's what I enjoyed, and there was actually like dialogue that I listened to. And this wasn't just all shoot 'em up killing kinds of action flick. There was actually a story here.
Well, and I think, and you're exactly right. And I think this is what separates it from the other Neeson features. The script's really good. The characters are really well thought out. And I think there's also something to the fact that this is based on this historical era.
Exactly.
And I hope we were there.
Yeah.
You know, and it looks at the ramifications of this and what it does to your character. I love the touch at the beginning. You talked about where he assassinates these guys. He takes them to a remote part of the forest, and after he buries them, he plants a tree. And you see this, you know, the section of trees that he's planted over the years and how they're different heights, you know, and that's like his legacy. I thought that was just brilliant.
Yeah, and I love the environmental aspect of it too.
Hey, you know, Lion King, Circle of Life, Rand.
That's right, exactly.
But yeah, this one's a cut above for him. I really liked it.
Well, and it reminded me why Neeson is good to watch. He takes over the screen and he really commands the screen. And I loved seeing that. It reminds me of who he was before he did all that other crap.
You know what he's doing next?
What?
They're remaking The Naked Gun.
Really?
And he's going to be in the Leslie Nielsen part.
Okay.
Leslie Nielsen was a serious actor before he started making those films. Yeah. I think it could be brilliant.
It might be.
And I like the fact that he's trying to get out of this, you know, this rut that he's in.
Yeah. And you have to wonder, you know, how much of that was like a personal trauma that he's experienced and how.
Oh, with the death of his wife, he's talked about that, how he just had to immerse himself in his work and, you know, talk about any script that came along. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really kind of looking forward to the Naked Gun thing. If they do it right, it could be hilarious.
It could be. It's got potential.
Yeah, we'll see.
So that's about it for this week, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. I want to mention a movie called Late Night with the Devil.
Oh, yes. Please do.
David Desmalchian, he plays a TV host from the 70s. He's always number two to Johnny Carson. This is a found footage horror film. Apparently, the master tape of this infamous episode has reemerged, and that's what we see. It takes place on Halloween in 1977. And everything goes wrong. Everything goes wrong. He's always been number two. He loses his wife to cancer. He's kind of a sad sack. And there's some implications that maybe he's made a deal he shouldn't have made to get some success. And on this TV show, this episode, he has a psychic who sometimes is right and sometimes isn't. You've got this guy who comes on, and his specialty is to debunk everything that has to do with psychics and the occult. And then there's a parapsychologist who comes on. She's written a book about a girl who's been possessed by the devil. The devil is supposedly gone, but the girl is there on the show. And things go horribly, horribly wrong. I really like this one because it's like you're sitting at home watching it as it plays out, because it plays out in real time. We're watching the episode as it would have supposedly aired, and you see this just steady progression towards this disaster that takes place. The only regret I have is that I didn't see it in the theater.
Oh, okay.
When you see it, you'll see what I mean. It had to have been a hoot in a theater with reactions that must have occurred. I think it premiered at South by Southwest or one of the big film festivals.
Okay.
And it rolled out from there. Just audience reaction, word of mouth, I guess, was just incredible. And it lives up to the hype.
Okay. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Another one, since you mentioned that, I want to mention Problemista. That is a very limited release. I think it's just major cities, right?
We need to come back and mention this again when it becomes more available on streaming and things. Because that was a pleasant surprise.
Oh my gosh. What a total surprise. Julio Torres directs, writes, and stars in this with Tilda Swinton.
And who the hell is Julio Torres?
Don't know.
Yeah, he comes up with this thing, and I'm like, okay, what are you going to do next, man? You've impressed me that much.
Oh, he is absolutely incredible. This is one of the most inventive, creative films I have seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of the Charlie Kaufman stuff, like Being John Malkovich.
Sure, sure.
And adaptation. It's cut from that same cloth.
It is, in a little bit more lighthearted kind of way, with a punch at the end, you know?
Yeah. Are you going to tell us more about it now, or are we going to hang on?
Let's hold on, because it isn't playing in enough places for us to really delve into it, but just put that on your radar, and we will come back to Problemista. Another one to put on your radar we're going to talk about next week is Dog Man, Musica, and Wicked Little Letters.
Yep, big week next week. A lot of stuff coming out. Also, Monkey Man comes out next week, which I think is bad releasing. I mean, you've got a movie named Dog Man and then Monkey Man on the same week. I think this is bad counter-programming. I don't know. Maybe it's me. But we'll have to see if these two things knock each other out at the box office or what.
Yeah, we will find out. Monkey versus dog. We will find out.
There we go. Are both of those like positions in, you know, a martial art? Is there a monkey position and a dog position, or am I?
Well, I know in yoga there's downward dog.
There's downward dog, right?
But I don't know that there's monkey.
A monkey?
Don't know.
Okay. Yeah, you can't see me. I'm trying to hang by my arms, and Pam is laughing at me, as she should.
Yeah, good try. Good try.
Not a good look? Okay. All right. Not doing me any favors, as a friend of ours would say.
Oh, wouldn't he, though? All right. Well, that wraps it up for Real Talk with Chuck and Pam. Check out all our reviews on realtalkwithchuckandpam.com. Check us out on Facebook. We have a sneak preview opportunity for anybody in the Chicago area to see Wicked Little Letters at the Landmark Theater on April 3rd at 7 p.m. Go to Facebook, fill out the form, and get an opportunity to go see that movie.
Have a good week, everybody.